Our scripture reading this morning is going to take a different format than our usual readers. Today we're going to be looking at the story of Esther, which spans many chapters in the Bible. She has her own book, and rather than try to read that whole story, we want to present a children's video, a video from a curriculum that we use called Holy Moly. It tells the whole story in just a few minutes. So here this morning, the story of Esther. I hope you enjoy those videos. Our kids love them. I love the detail of the king having the rose. Like, you know, this is the very first bachelor in history. But I show it, picked it this morning, not just because its ability to condense the story down to just a few minutes, but for the ways in which it sets up the themes of authority and vulnerability that we've been talking about for a few weeks now. If you haven't been with us the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about authority and vulnerability, and this comes from a book called Strong and Weak by Andy Crouch. It's available in our bookstore if you want to go deeper after today's message. Let me define authority and vulnerability for us just to make sure we're all on the same page. Authority, Andy defines, not as just like the ability to boss people around and make people do what you say. Authority is about the capacity for meaningful action. And authority comes from lots of different places. Certainly, it can come from your position in a business or organization or family, but more often, authority comes from your knowledge and your skills and your insight, your wisdom, or your relationships and your influence. But every single one of us has the capacity to take meaningful action. God gives us all authority, platforms from which to act. But God also gives each and every person vulnerability. And vulnerability is more than just a feeling of, I feel vulnerable. Vulnerability is exposure to meaningful loss or risk. It's facing that possibility of losing something that we really value inside. And vulnerability is also part of what it means to be human, that this is how God has created us. And none of us like risk or to face the possibility of loss. And so most of us use authority to cover up our vulnerability. But as we talked about last week, this is the false choice, because where we really flourish as human beings is when authority and vulnerability come together, especially in relationships and communities. That's where we flourish. That brings out the best of us. And so rather than putting them as opposites, we've been putting them on a 2x2 grid. And then you see there's lots of options for us as human beings, that when they're both together, authority and vulnerability, we flourish. But when we only have authority and no vulnerability, we run the risk of exploiting, using our authority to benefit ourselves at the expense of others. Or if you have all risk and no ability to change that, then you're in the realm of suffering. If you have neither, then you've kind of withdrawn from the world. So using this grid, I'm going to run through the story of Esther. And you can see in your sermon outline today, the same grid appears. And I invite you simply to place a dot as we talk about each character for where you think they belong on the grid. So let's talk about Esther first. Esther is born into great vulnerability. And that's not just because she's born vulnerable as a child like all of us are. For her, it's because she's born as a Jew. And she's only a few generations removed from what we call the Babylonian exile. Esther's great-grandparents were among those who, when the Babylonians came in and destroyed the city of Jerusalem, they were bound and chained and marched across the desert into bondage. Now, eventually, the Persians came along and defeated the Babylonians, and they freed the Jews to go back to their homeland. But there were many Jews who chose to stay right where they were. Esther's family was among those. But you can imagine the status that they would have in that society as foreigners, exiles, didn't speak the same language, didn't worship different gods, had different customs. They were outsiders. Her status would have been low. Add to that the fact that she was an orphan, that neither her mother nor her father are living, and instead she's raised by her cousin, Mordecai. When the king chooses Esther, she has no authority to make that choice, or even to resist that choice. She just goes because she's been picked out of a lot. So she's kind of in that suffering quadrant. The king, meanwhile, he does have authority. Like, he can choose the girl and she has to go. I mean, not anyone says no to the king, but this is the thing that's interesting about the king in this story, is that he's not really exercising his authority to its full potential. Instead, he gives his authority to someone else to run the kingdom on his behalf. He's really withdrawn into a life of luxury. He has no vulnerability. He's not really exercising authority. He's just enjoying himself. He's safe. So who has the authority? Well, it's Haman. He was the skinny guy in the video. Haman is the king's chief advisor, his second in command. And basically, the king lets Haman rule on his behalf. But Haman doesn't use that authority to help the kingdom to flourish, to benefit others. He uses it solely for himself, for his own selfish ends, his own glory. So he very clearly exploited others. This wasn't just an exaggeration of the video. The biblical record is that he created laws that made every single person bow down to him. And of course, everyone did, except for one man, Mordecai. And this is the first example of flourishing we see. Now, Mordecai's authority is very limited. The only thing he's really in control of is his own two knees. But he exercises that authority and stands up to Haman. And we shouldn't overlook how challenging that had to be, that everyone else was bowing down, everyone else was giving in, but he stood up. And here's the thing I don't want you to miss, that when Mordecai exercises his authority, what happens to his vulnerability? It increases, right? I mean, if he had just given up his authority and bowed down just like everyone else, then he would be less vulnerable. But in resisting injustice and idolatry, actually his vulnerability increases. This is what I mean when I say authority and vulnerability are linked. And Mordecai, I guess I said earlier, the only authority he had was over his own tunis, but that's not exactly a true statement, because he did have one other source of authority, and that's his relationship with Esther. He knows someone who has influence over the king, and that's the authority to which he appeals. And which gets us kind of full circle back to Esther again. And Esther, by this point in the story, is no longer in the suffering quadrant, because she's not really entirely vulnerable. The king has taken that away. She's living a life of luxury in the king's court. But she doesn't really have authority either. And in fact, to use her authority, same as with Mordecai, using her authority will increase her vulnerability. And this is where Mordecai actually overestimates the authority she has and underestimates the risk. Because Esther explains to Mordecai in the biblical story, she says, if anyone walks into the king's presence unsummoned, that person will be killed on the spot unless the king extends his scepter to him. And so just approaching the king bears incredible risk for Esther. And on top of that, she has not been summoned into the king's presence in 30 days, over a month, since she's even seen the king, which says that the king has kind of moved on to the next bachelorette. He's moved past her. And yet Mordecai insists this is the only chance for your people. He asked her to take that step into risk and authority. And at least at first, Esther balks. She says no, because she does it for the same reason any of us would, that she just wants to be safe. There's an interesting relationship, I think, between safety and flourishing. The truth is that we have to feel safe and secure in order to flourish as human beings. I mean, individuals, we need safety and security. Communities, nations, we need safety and security in order to flourish. But it's also true, the opposite, if you go to the other end of the spectrum, is also true, that if we never experience risk, if we never step out of our comfort zones, we also fail to flourish. And this is what I call the safety paradox. We were talking about that in my book studies this week, where we've been kind of going through Andy Crouch's book. And one of the members of the class said, you know, I think we need to differentiate between different kinds of safety. And for me, this was like a light bulb going off. He said, you know, there's two different kinds of safety. There's what he called turtle safety. I call personal safety. That's the withdrawing down into our shell, you know, sticking our head in, our arms in, letting the shrapnel hit everyone else instead. And he says, that's one kind of safety, but there's also a relational security that we can't thrive without. When I think about relational security, I think about my role as a dad. I remember when Margaret was 14 months old, she, you know, finally had walking down pretty solid. In fact, she was running just about everywhere she went. And we went to visit some friends who had a lake house. And this lake house had a deck that was about 2.5 feet off the ground. It wasn't very tall, but there was no railing along the deck, which is perfectly fine for an adult, but for a child who's still kind of mastering walking, there's some danger there. And we spent most of that weekend hanging out on the deck, and all the adults, you know, kind of sat up at the table except for me, because I planted myself on the ground below that deck. I just knew Margaret sooner or later, as she just would wander, you know, because she didn't really have any sense yet of danger or where her feet were going to happen. So I would just kind of shadow her back and forth along that deck. And I'd still participate in the conversation, but one eye was always on what my daughter was doing. And sure enough, sooner or later, she wasn't paying attention where she was going, and her foot stepped where there was nothing but thin air, and she tumbled. And I was right there to catch her and put her back up. And then she thought, wow, this is fun. And so she started doing it again, and within minutes, it evolved into some weird game of trying to, like, trick me, you know, like run away from me, and yet it was always running into danger, and I had to just chase after her. Whenever she'd run off, I'd swing her back and then bring her back in and set her back in safety. I remember that so perfectly as a parent, because that's the role of a parent, is to protect children. Children have incredible vulnerability. They're completely unaware of the risks that they're exposed to, but they also have authority. It's wrong to say children don't have authority. Ask any parent of a newborn child the kind of authority a child has. When they scream, you drop everything to respond, right? So they have vulnerability and authority, just like all of us do. But our job as parents is to limit, to control how much risk and how much action, meaningful action, we place upon a child. We kind of control and modulate that. We control the pace at which they experience risk, at which they gain responsibility. And our role as parents is slowly to give them a little more risk, a little more responsibility, a little more risk, a little more responsibility, a little more agency in the world, and to be their safety net whenever they need it. I think about teaching my kids to ride a bike. I'm giving them authority to acquire a skill, to go wherever they want on their bike, but I'm also exposing them to a risk, and I'm right there behind them, and I kind of have to embrace that as a parent. That's what human flourishing looks like, to go along this axis and slowly have a little more authority and a little more vulnerability, to leave safety and to step into flourishing. And one of the challenges, I just speak for myself as a dad, is that sometimes I struggle to turn off that instinct of protection, right? I still want to plant myself on the ground to catch my kids, but I've learned I can't always swoop in to protect, to rescue, that sometimes I have to allow my children to experience frustration, to experience failure. Because what happens if our children never encounter frustration and failure? What happens if they never hear no spoken to them and have to wrestle with that? If we don't do that, then they don't flourish. We stunt their development. They end up being exploiters or victims or just withdrawn. See, it's in relational security where we, as children and as adults, where we learn boundaries and limits and failure and grace. And when we ever exchange relational security for just our own personal safety, we lose something, we sacrifice something that makes us human. And the greatest caricature that I can think of what this looks like comes from the movie WALL-E. How many of you have seen the movie WALL-E? Okay. A lot of hands didn't go up, so I'll give you a quick recount of the plot. WALL-E is a robot. The story is set in sometime in the not too distant future when humans have abdicated our responsibility to care for the planet, because the planet is so polluted that it can no longer sustain life. And so humans board into this, cruise ship to go through space, leaving the robots behind, like WALL-E, to clean up our mess. And so WALL-E's job, day after day, is to simply collect trash, compact it, and along the way he scavenges and finds, little treasures like the Rubik's Cube, And this is his life day after day until two things happen to kind of change the trajectory of WALL-E's story. The first is he meets a girl, a robot named Eve that's sent from that mothership back to Earth to look for signs of life. And then the second thing that happens is WALL-E finds that sign of life in the form of a small plant. And when he presents it to Eve as a gift, then Eve takes it back to the mothership with WALL-E kind of trailing behind. And once we get to this mothership, that's when we see what humans have become. Because for generation after generation in this story, we no longer care for ourselves. We just live a life of luxury. It's all about satiating our every need. We no longer are exercising any authority. We no longer experience any vulnerability. And frankly, with the absence of gravity too, we just become flat blobs, something less than what we're supposed to be. Until we meet one character, the captain. And the captain, has given up his authority to the autopilot. You see there that little kind of robot there named Otto. Not entirely original, but Otto. Anyways, and he's given up his authority, but when he encounters the plant, something awakens in the captain. He has the desire to return home, but in order to do that, he has to take back the authority that he's surrendered. Here's a quick clip of what that looks like at the kind of climactic moment of WALL-E. And that's a little cliffhanger, not sure what's going to happen to Wally. If you've never seen the movie, I highly recommend watching it. If you do, stick around for the credits. You get a good picture of what human flourishing looks like just in the credit montage. That video is kind of silly, far-fetched, but to me it captures very briefly in those few steps of the captain how hard it really is to reclaim our authority when we've given it up and surrendered it to something else just to keep us safe. But that's the call, is for us to reclaim the authority of who God wants us to be, that we aren't destined to live lives of luxury, of just sitting around. We are called to live lives of meaningful risk and meaningful action in the world to flourish. And if you want some non-fictional examples of what this looks like, think of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a German pastor during the rise of Nazism and Hitler. At one point, his life was in danger, and he escaped because of his outspoken criticism of Hitler, and he escaped to England. And he had the choice then that he could have withdrawn for the rest of his life and just settled in England or in America and taught and written. But instead, he went back to Germany and led an underground movement to train pastors to speak out against the evils of Nazism, and in fact, was eventually arrested, tried, and executed for his role in trying to bring Hitler's power to an end. I think of people like Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu, who faced unbelievable risk and surrendered their freedom in order to set their people free from the system of apartheid. I think of people like Mahatma Gandhi, who led his people against the exploitation of the British, and who endured countless beatings and imprisonments, and in his own hunger fasts, embodied the suffering of his people. Or if you want to bring it back to our country, I think of leaders like Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and all those in the civil rights movement. And I love this quote from Martin Luther King. He says, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." In other words, it's not when we're in the withdrawing safety stage that we find our true measure. It's when we step into risk, into challenge, that we discover who God created us to be. And all these people are easy to set up on idols and pedestals, you know, like they're something more than human, but they're not. They bore the same skin that we do. They face the same fears and troubles. They just made a crucial decision. They made the decision to bear someone else's vulnerability. They made the decision that the authority that God and life had placed in their hands wasn't just meant for their own flourishing, wasn't just meant to protect their own vulnerability. It was given to them for the purpose of creating the possibility for others to be liberated and set free, that they might flourish too. And this is the choice that confronts Esther. Is she going to use the authority that she's been given only for herself so that she can reside in safety and enjoy the luxury of the king's court? Or is she going to bear the vulnerability of her people? This is the choice Christ makes, that he used his authority to choose a cross and to bear our vulnerability, to make possible a path of flourishing and forgiveness for us. You see on that chart, I want you to go back to that sermon outline, and I want you to put a dot for yourself. One little dot, and put beside it the word me. Where would you put yourself? I do hope there are many of us in here who are flourishing. And certainly my heart breaks if you find yourself in a place of suffering. I seriously doubt many of us would say we're exploiting others, actively exploiting. I think the temptation for most of us is to withdraw, to just want to stay where it's safe and comfortable, to face the temptation that Esther faced. And how did Mordecai prod her out of her safety? He simply pointed to her authority. He said, "Who knows, but it might be for such a time as this that God has placed you where you are. You have authority that you don't even recognize you have." And so the challenge for us, I think the call for us, is to step into the authority that God has given us. For such a time as this, our world is in such need of us to step forward and to claim the authority we've been, to use the knowledge, to use the influence, to use the relationships we have on behalf, not just of ourselves, but to bear the vulnerability of others. This is the choice that confronted Esther. It's the choice that confronts us. There's a quote, I was going to put it on the screen, with Nelson Mandela, until I found out that Nelson Mandela didn't actually say it. It was from Marianne Williamson, but to me, this captures it perfectly. She writes, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who are we to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented? Who are you not to be? For you are a child of God, and your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that others won't feel insecure. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us, and it's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same." You and I are called to embrace our light, to embrace our authority, and to step forward just like Esther did, because that is the path of flourishing.